like you. So please, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 or click on the red donate box in the mobile app or snail mail your paper check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks to all the contributors to today's Old Mole Variety Hour. Thanks to Kevin Foster and Zia LaBeouf for their conversation about organizing with Jewish Voice for Peace Portland. Thanks to Sophie Smith and Karen Coulter of the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project for their talk about forests and how to defend them. Thanks to C. Marie Furman for her talk about the life of the Salmon River watershed. Thanks to Joe Clement for our theme song and to Desiree Helligers for behind-the-scenes help. Thanks to all the staff, volunteers, and listener members of KBOO. The Old Mole will be back next Monday with more news, views, reviews, and interviews.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Here at KBOO, today we are celebrating Earth Day. By taking a moment to celebrate nature and by bringing you special programming all day, featuring interviews with activists and nonprofit leaders and covering issues such as ecological justice, environmental awareness, climate activism, animal rights advocacy, and the indigenous concept of Mother Earth. Again, continue to join us today, Earth Day, for a celebration of all things nature, environmental awareness, animal rights advocacy, and climate activism, here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th to donate. And help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
Support for Earth Day programming comes from KBOO members in One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in Southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we start, I want to remind you that this is the first week of our spring membership drive. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KBOO has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So please show your support for this amazing community resource and help us reach our $50,000 goal by making a contribution today, or better yet, become a monthly sustaining member. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting listener-powered radio. Woody biomass is being promoted as a carbon-neutral climate solution. Proposals for industrial wood pellet projects are popping up in California and Washington State that claim they will help to protect forests and benefit rural communities, as well as combat climate change. But past experience with similar projects in the southeastern United States and British Columbia debunked these claims. Today we talk with Rita Frost, forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council, about Golden State Natural Resources wood pellet projects proposed for two Northern California counties. These mega facilities would produce up to 1 million tons of wood pellets to be burned in industrial power plants in Europe and Asia. Rita, welcome to Locus Focus.
Oh, thanks so much, Barbara. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, today is Earth Day, so I thought it might be nice to frame this discussion that we're going to have about biomass in terms of the context of what Earth Day means and maybe the newest challenges on this Earth Day, because we seem to be fighting so many false climate solutions to add to all the rest of the things that we're trying to take care of.
When I'm thinking about the context of it being Earth Day, it's a fascinating place to find myself in. I'm in my 30s. My entire life, I've lived on a warming planet. I have grown up and been educated in a world that has told me that we are facing the climate crisis, we're facing the biodiversity crisis, and we're facing a justice crisis in the United States that we must face and we must tackle head on. And it seems like there are two main philosophical ways to view this problem, one being like a wizard and one being like a prophet, which reminds me of the book called The Wizard and the Prophet by Charles Mann. And in it, what is really spelled out for us is that we can take one of two viewpoints. We could be an environmentalist that is finding ourselves on this planet that has a lot of problems that we're having to face. And we could say, we must innovate. Only in that way can everyone win. And we can dive into the viewpoints of being wizards, you know, coming up with all these sorts of solutions, techno fixes, so to speak. Or we could take the viewpoint of the prophet's cry being, we have to cut back. We have to limit ourselves to live within the bounds that this earth can hold for us. We have to look at the systems that the earth has set up. We have to realize that we're part of a very intricate ecosystem that values all sorts of creatures, both two-legged and otherwise. And when I think about that book and where it has taken me and how I've evolved and where I am in my own career now, facing the wood pellet biomass industry, I think it's really interesting that the solutions, the techno fixes that we're seeing, so to speak, very much are coming as false solutions. They're dressed up. They have green sheens on them. They are greenwashing. And it takes some critical inquiry to look into what those products and what those solutions will actually provide for us as a species tackling the problems we're trying to face to determine if they are real solutions or if they are false solutions.
Well, it seems like one of the biggest challenges right now, compared to what the challenges were back in 1970 for the first Earth Day, is in a way the technofix part, and particularly the kinds of false solutions you're talking about, are obscuring what the real problems are. We've been aware of greenwashing for a really long time, but it seems like it's really taken off since the fossil fuel industry decided, instead of defending themselves as purveyors of fossil fuel carbon-emitting products, they said, well, now we're going to make these products that are carbon neutral and that are going to be much cleaner and that they're going to be a solution to the climate crisis, and in a way obscuring things much more than I think they were before. And I wonder what kind of challenge you see that plays.
Well, one of the challenges that I think that we're facing with our energy system is that we are emitting so many greenhouse gases that we're now at a place where temperatures are rising. This is a well-established fact. We have to limit ourselves also to try to limit that warming to 1.5 degrees. That's usually the agreed upon limit that's been set by the Paris Climate Accord, at least not more than 2 degrees. And when we're trying to figure out how to limit our carbon emissions, it's become very clear that fossil fuels are bad. Fossil fuels bad, coal bad, get off coal. You know, those are some very easy things that people are clinging on to. And that's oftentimes how the door has become open for a source like biomass and wood pellets, which is really what I want to talk about today. But when you burn wood pellets, when you burn biomass at the smokestack, it's just as emissive as fossil fuels, as the coal that we're trying to replace. So we need to be critical in saying, not only do we want to get off of fossil fuels, not only do we want to get off of coal, but we want to get off emissive sources. The goal is to limit greenhouse gas emissions. The goal isn't just to get off of fossil fuels. The reason why we want to get off of fossil fuels is because of those greenhouse gas emissions. But it's been co-opted and easy to just say, okay, we got off fossil fuels, that's great. But when you look underneath the surface of what happens to the atmosphere when you're burning biomass, you're actually increasing emissions, which is going to be further contributing to climate change.
An interesting thing about biomass is that there was a while where it was seriously touted as a green solution by people like Bill McKibben. And actually, speaking of Bill McKibben in Vermont, in 2006, I was in Burlington, Vermont, and got a tour of their biomass furnace that generated their electricity. And it was being pointed out as being a really great clean source for generating electricity. I know that Bill McKibben no longer believes that, and I'm not sure if that biomass facility in Burlington is still going. But to me, indicates how much we've learned, and that back when I was a hippie in the 70s, we all burned wood. We burned it for a lot of reasons. I mean, part of it because we lived where there was no electricity a lot, and it was also a very pleasing kind of way to get warm. You know, burning is very comforting. But it was interesting when I moved back to Portland and I was still heating with wood in a neighborhood where everybody else was heating with wood. And we started noticing how sweet the air smelled in not a good way. And that was when people were starting to realize that burning wood in any kind of concentration is producing a lot of carbon monoxide. So I think there's been a real shift about how great wood burning is for the climate. But when we talk about the kind of biomass development that you're working to stop in Northern California and that you also fought for a long time in the Southeast, it seems like this is kind of biomass on steroids that I don't think that the hippies in the 70s could have even imagined.
Yeah, that's a really interesting image that you paint. I mean, to me, it sounds incredibly cozy to have a wood-fired fireplace in your home to snuggle up, to have maybe a cup of hot cocoa. I can imagine all of these things. The biomass that I'm talking about, the wood pellets that I'm talking about, the production that I saw explode in the Southeast is at a very different scale than wood pellet or wood burning in people's homes. What I'm describing and what I'm focused on with Natural Resources Defense Council, as well as many other environmental nonprofits, is actually the industrial scale production of wood pellets to eventually be burned in a power station for somebody to be able to charge their phone or to be able to turn on their lights. Yes, sometimes it's for heat, but the thrust of the issue is that it's being used to generate electricity. Furthermore, and I don't know how this applies to wood pellet stoves or wood burning in homes, one of the biggest issues that we have with wood pellet production and eventual burning for electricity or combined heat and power is the fact that it's considered carbon neutral. And the reason why I bring that up is that wood burning in homes oftentimes does have some sort of emissions calculations behind it. But there's an important discrepancy with burning wood pellets in power stations in the European Union and the United Kingdom, and that they count it as carbon neutral, and they're not fully accounting for those emissions that are going into the air. That is one of the biggest problems, is that it's being pushed and really incentivized at an industrial scale for entire countries as energy usage because of its carbon neutral and climate friendly classification.
Well, I really want to get into what activists like you are calling this accounting error. To me, it's really hard to ponder how this ever was allowed to happen. 40 years ago in Portland, they actually required wood stoves to have catalytic converters in homes. So back in 1983, the city of Portland, and I think the state of Oregon, recognized the pollutants coming out of wood burning. I don't think we were thinking about carbon dioxide in those days. But just understanding that wood stoves are polluting back in 1983, I don't quite understand how the biomass industry could get away with saying that they're carbon neutral. And also, I think they say that they're not polluting, because usually the pollutants are just an indication of just how much carbon emissions also are happening.
Yep. So this is a great question. Why is this happening? Well, in the Southeast and in the projections that we're seeing for the Pacific Northwest, the wood pellet production industry has proliferated because of erroneous renewable energy policies, as I said, that originated in Europe and the United Kingdom. About 15 years ago, it was around 2009, the European Union was trying to determine its renewable energy directive. This directly came out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The globe got together and said that we need to limit emissions. Some of those biggest sectors that create emissions in each country is their energy sector. When they were determining their renewable energy directive in the European Union, they categorized burning trees as zero carbon. Unfortunately, the European Union and the United Kingdom, if you've ever visited, they are beautiful places, but they've cut down most of their forests. So they set their sights on one of the world's biggest wood baskets, which is the Southeast. And the industry there promised...
Southeast of the United States.
Yes. Excuse me, you're correct. The Southeastern United States is one of the world's biggest wood baskets. Yep. the industry in the Southeast said, okay, we can promise you a sustainable market. So if you have these renewable energy policies that are incentivizing burning wood, we can promise you that we'll always be bringing that product to market. And policymakers in the U.S. Southeast really did little to ensure that that definition of sustainable included values of biodiversity, recognized climate change, ensured protections for communities. No, sustainable was purely defined by the industry for the industry around bringing a product to market. So that's an important distinction there, is who is deciding what the definition of sustainable is. So the issue there is that when wood pellets are produced in the Southeast from forests, they're put on ships and they're eventually sent to the European Union or the United Kingdom and they're burned there. Climate scientists have told us that that actually creates more emissions at the smokestack than coal. And as the industry sets its sights on the Pacific Northwest, that is because Southeast Asian countries like Japan and South Korea want to copy the European Union and the United Kingdom's renewable energy laws. Worryingly, the Pacific Northwest policymakers that we have, they're opening up the doors for the wood pellet production industry because they see it as a solution to wildfires, because they are desperate for fuels reduction. Yet the evidence doesn't support these accounting errors of the renewable energy policies, nor does it support the claim that increased logging and thinning for wood pellet production will lessen wildfires. So calling it renewable energy is incredibly misleading. Cutting down forests and burning them to make electricity is going to increase greenhouse gas emissions during the precise time that we need to be cutting them. The erroneous argument that originated in the European Union and the United Kingdom and has since been debunked, I'll make that very clear, is reliant on an argument that trees grow back. Because we know this, right? You know that if you cut down a tree and you plant another tree, that tree is going to grow back. However, growing a tree takes time. And this is where there is an incredible error in this accounting. Burning forest biomass is immediate. So once you cut down that tree, turn it into wood pellet, and you burn it, those emissions go into the atmosphere immediately. But for that tree to grow back, something that's called the carbon payback period, that can take anywhere between 44 years and centuries, depending on what kind of tree it is, what forest it comes from, what the growing conditions are like, how climate change affects the growing of that tree. All of that takes time. It's not rocket science, but it has gone into that accounting error that I was explaining earlier. So the problem that we have here is that the scientific consensus has made it abundantly clear that burning forest biomass increases emissions in the atmosphere. And yet on paper, in our policies, in the United Kingdom and the European Union's policies, I should say, it's counted as zero. So it perversely incentivizes the industry to continue to grow. In the U.S. Southeast, when this policy originated back in 2009, there were practically zero mills. Now there are nearly 40. The industry has literally increased 500% in a span of a decade or so. So it's all being driven by erroneous carbon assumptions that were supposed to be helping our climate, but in fact are making it worse. The European Union's renewable energy is incredibly reliant on biomass burning to meet their climate target goals. It makes up a full 60% of what they count as renewable energy. So they're also very politically reliant now to keep biomass within that same definitional box, so to speak.
Well, you're listening to Lucas Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Rita Frost, forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council, about the dangers and damage of producing and burning woody biomass for energy production. The question that bugs me, besides the understanding of this false accounting error about not understanding that it's going to take a long time to, again, sequester the carbon that's being released when you cut the forest and when you burn them. But the other thing that's puzzling to me is why the emissions from the burning of the wood pellets isn't being taken into consideration.
Okay, great. So you're really getting into climate policies. I love it. So theoretically, the way that carbon emission accounting works is that there are multiple sectors. One place is in the energy sector, that is at the smokestack, where a lot of different energy sources are burned. Another sector, and this relates to forests and this relates to biomass, is in what we call the land use change in forestry sector. It's the LULUCF sector. So theoretically, when policymakers decided to place biomass and the burning of biomass in a sector, they chose to put it in the LULUCF sector. They said that this energy source comes from land. Again, we talked about trees grow back. There's this assumption that it's going to happen immediately, even though we've already established that that's wrong. And so theoretically, they decided to put it into the LULUCF category instead of in the energy sector because they wanted to avoid double counting, you know, because such double counting would occur if one country reported carbon pollution from deforestation where the pellets were produced, reducing forest carbon. And then another country, if they reported the pollution when the wood was burned for electricity and sent into the atmosphere, then we'd have double counting. We don't want that, right? We want accurate accounting. And so the approach was supposed to ensure that the climate impacts of wood energy are accounted for somewhere and paid for by somebody through a carbon pricing program, right? That would be the ideal situation. But that would require an extraordinary overhaul of global climate policy. And in reality, the approach disguises the climate impacts of wood power by spreading the responsibility for pollution away from the individual power plants, right? Where the pollution should be heavily regulated, should be heavily taxed. Europe does have a carbon trading program, and instead it places it on foreign nations' forestry sectors, like the United States' forestry sector. There, the pollution could be easily overlooked and is not taxed. And one of the reasons why it's easily overlooked in the United States is because this gets into the definitions between deforestation and forest degradation. In the United States, a forest is considered a forest as long as the land use does not change. So if you look at a forest, it could be a managed forest, it could be a natural forest. That forest could be 40 years old, it could be 120 years old, it could be a mature and old growth forest. If you cut down that forest and there are no trees that you can see, all you can see is stumps, that still counts as a forest. So in the LULUCF sector in the United States, nothing has changed. As long as that forest is not converted to a parking lot, to a Walmart, to a soybean field, to any other thing that could be considered a land use change, nothing has changed in the accounting framework, right? So this is why we say the emissions kind of just disappear. We're not fully accounting for forestry's impact on the landscape. We're also not really accounting for the true responsible owner of those emissions, which some may argue is the power plant burner. It doesn't incentivize the European Union or the United Kingdom utility that's burning those trees to consider their climate impact if they don't have to account for their emissions. So relegating the emissions to the LULUCF sector does avoid double counting, but it also means that it might not pick it up. And even though our atmosphere is seeing a rise in emissions, none of us humans are taking account of it.
Well, on this Earth Day, I want to remind you that we are on the first week of KBOO's spring membership drive, focusing on the postmodern, the avant-garde, and the alternative. If you like what you're listening to and you want to contribute to more cutting-edge and thrilling programming, help us reach our $50,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give to donate today or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Let's talk about this other strange factor that plays into the growth of biomass. This is a company called Drax, and they're a British company originally?
They are still a British company, yep.
And they were a coal company, basically. So let's talk about the history of Drax and how they play into the proliferation of biomass.
Drax is the world's largest burner of wood pellet biomass. They're the world's largest burner of forest biomass, as it's also called. They're also the world's number two producer of wood pellets. They own a number of mills in the southeastern United States. They also own some mills up in British Columbia, closer to where we are speaking now. They're proposing more mills in the Pacific Northwest. In fact, they have noted to investors that the Pacific Northwest will be its newest sourcing area. And this will allow Drax to not only be able to ensure its own supply to burn in the United Kingdom, they have a power station in Yorkshire, but also to supply other customers. They're very much setting themselves out to be one of the world's largest wood pellet producers. And history needs to be a potent guide for us in California and Washington, as Drax proposes a specific mill in Longview, Washington, that is just across the border of Oregon. And then also they have signed a memorandum of understanding with a wood pellet developer in California, and they're linked to two industrial scale mills there. We have learned a lot from Drax. They have dug their own grave, so to speak, in the Southeast and in British Columbia. They have a history of misleading statements. They have been caught sourcing precious, never-before-logged forests in Canada by BBC, and they have been exposed on BBC for that. They've been accused of environmental racism in the Southeastern United States. And they have racked up millions of dollars of fines for illegally emitting pollution and breaking the Clean Air Act. To go into those a little bit more specifically, you know, in 2022, they were accused of environmental racism for citing their wood pellet plants in majority Black communities with very high poverty rates. This is true across the Southeast. 50% of plants that are producing wood pellets are more likely to be located in an environmental justice community than not. And then furthermore, Drax itself has some of the wood pellet industry's largest fines from regulators, and they are doing this in very polluter-friendly states. They have racked up and they have paid settlements of $3.2 million to the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. It was $1.6 million over two notifications. And then in 2019, Drax was also fined $2.5 million for pollution violations in Mississippi. All the while, Drax is polluting communities. Environmental justice communities that live around those facilities have complained about their activities. In fact, Drax has an annual shareholder meeting coming up, and community members are going to be delivering their comments to them in person. They're that upset at this company. So for Washington and California, we need to be very concerned about how that history may spread itself and may land itself in Washington and in California. And also it will impact Oregon. That is not something that I want to minimize at all, because for the Washington plant and for the Northern California plant that I was mentioning, both of those will source from Oregon forests. And we should be concerned about Drax's track record in forests with communities and how they're impacting the climate.
Well, there's a wonderful movie that I think you were involved in. The film's called Burned, and it's been shown a few times in the Portland area and up near Longview. And it shows what happens to these forests that get into the control of Drax. And one of the things to me that's heartbreaking and merely anger-stoking is that Drax and the rest of the wood pellet proponents claim that they're just using wood scraps from logging, stuff that is already cut. They don't cut virgin trees. They don't cut old growth. However, the ground truthing that the Dogwood Collective in Southeast United States has done shows otherwise. So let's talk about the discrepancy between what Drax claims it's doing and what they're really doing.
I would be happy to talk about that, because this is where I have a lot of direct experience. Since 2015, I myself have tracked the wood pellet production industry on the ground from forest to the pellet plant. And through our work at Dogwood Alliance, we've really helped expose the damaging logging practices that are used. And all of our work has been backed up by independent investigative reporting as well. So it's not just Dogwood Alliance that is doing this work. It is also investigative journalists that are confirming our findings. The industry has always persisted in using language that they are sustainable, as we talked about at the very beginning of this interview, right? They have promised that they will bring a product to market. And furthermore, when it comes to environmental concerns, they say they are using wastes. They say they are using residues. They're saying they're using unmerchantable trees. That's another thing that they love to say. Oh, we're using unmerchantable trees. Don't worry. The rest of the forest products industry won't be impacted by our operations. But the problem is that that is not how wildlife or the climate view these forests. And furthermore, what counts as a waste or residue to them is gray at best. It's not a black and white definition. In fact, I have been in many conversations with the industry directly. I point blank asked them how they define this term. One executive had the audacity to one time tell me that includes everything except for the stump. So as long as we're not taking the stump, you know, we can say that we're taking a waste or a residue or an unmerchantable tree. And then that way the public can feel like they're doing something good, right?
Wait a second. I just want to unpack that.
Yeah.
What's so great about the stump that means that they haven't taken a merchantable tree?
What it means for them is that they're not taking a whole tree, which is laughable. Exactly. Exactly. So this is part of their veneer. It's definitely part of their marketing. NRDC, Southern Environmental Law Center, and Dogwood Alliance produces an investigative wood pellet production report every single year to show that this is happening year after year after year. I would take reporters out frequently. I would take policymakers out frequently. This isn't like finding a needle in the haystack, right? It is something that is very easy to find around the mills in their sourcing areas. Furthermore, up in British Columbia, where Drax has several mills, the BBC has exposed them for logging in old growth, never before touched forests in the Boreal of Canada. You know, some of the most important carbon reserves that we have left. And yet Drax is sourcing from them. So what does that tell us? Right, for the Pacific Northwest. It kind of tells me that we can't trust whatever they may be saying about their forest practices or what they're promising to policymakers at this moment. Furthermore, one of the things that I want to unpack a little bit is that there was a study done by Clark University in 2022 that took our investigations and did some geospatial analysis. So they took, you know, some people may say that these investigations are anecdotal, they're place-based, they may not apply to the entire landscape. Well, what Clark University did is they decided to run a study to look at the whole sourcing radius of three mills that are on the North Carolina-Virginia border that are, they're pretty moderate in size. They're not the largest wood pellet production facilities in the United States, and they're also not the smallest. They're kind of like right in the middle. And they determined that the wood pellet industry's sourcing practices was actually leading to a net loss of forested area, which, again, I'm bringing this up because it's highlighting the misleading nature of many of the industry's main arguments. They like to say that they're taking waste. They like to say they're taking residues, leftovers, that they're not a contributor to any sort of forest degradation or deforestation in the United States. But what this study really spelled out is that instead of enhancing carbon, instead of making sure that they're not increasing emissions, the wood pellet biomass developments are undermining global efforts at really addressing climate change, because what the study showed is that they're increasing forest harvests over and above what would have been happening normally without these mills. That shows that these mills are a primary contributor to forest loss in the southern United States. And we should use that as an example to set ourselves up to know what we could expect out in the Pacific Northwest.
And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG UPF and KODX UPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Rita Frost, forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council, about the dangers and damage of producing and burning woody biomass for energy production. Now, during this first week of KBOO's spring membership drive and during this our celebration of Earth Day today, you can get us off to a great start by donating to kboo.fm/give. Your contribution goes towards independent, cutting-edge, unique programming by the people for the people. Help us meet our $50,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, and thanks for supporting community-powered radio. The film that we mentioned, Burned, has an interesting subtitle. It's called, Is Wood the New Coal? What does that mean?
I think what they really mean is, as we transition off of fossil fuels, as we transition off of coal, what sort of energy is next? A lot of utilities such as Drax and a lot of the policies that the European Union and the United Kingdom are setting out for us are allowing for sources like wood to be burned. It's interesting because it's not innovative. It was used by the caveman first. And importantly, these renewable energy policies are supposed, the goal of the renewable energy policy is not just renewable energy, right? The end goal is that it's supposed to be helping address climate change. It's supposed to be helping lessen greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere. However, when we log forests to be burned, we're not only losing their carbon sequestration and storage potential on the landscape where they were before they were needed as a wood pellet, and furthermore, we're releasing all of their emissions into the atmosphere immediately. That's definitely not a climate solution, and I hope that wood does not become the new coal. In fact, I think that the highest use of forests when we're facing the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis is to allow forests to mature, grow older, become refuge for species, serve the functions of providing us clean air and clean water, serve the cultural functions that they do for us. I mean, a lot of families are... They have a relationship with forests where they go and hunt and fish and camp in them. Indigenous communities the world over use forests for places that are more than just products, right? They see them as the place that is their pharmacy. It's also their grocery store. It could be their church, right? Humans have a deeper relationship to forests than just using them for products, and we have much higher uses for them than allowing them to be burned as an energy source. That is the lowest use of a forest.
One of the scary things in the film Burned is actually seeing the landscape, these forests, after they've been cut. It reminds me of clear cuts in the Northwest. And that's not supposed to be happening, right? They're not supposed to be clear-cutting these forests.
Yeah, in the Southeast, I can tell you as far as my own experience tracking and tracing the industry, they undoubtedly source from clear-cutting practices. I'm not sure what it is like up in BC. We should be talking to forest campaigners there about what they're seeing on the ground. But it is worrisome as far as precedent setting. You know, I don't want that forest practice to continue, and it shouldn't be the norm.
I guess one of the things that really troubles me about biomass is just how really deceptive it is. I mean, there are all the fossil fuel companies that are trying to put a green veneer on their practices, whether it's renewable diesel or biogas or any other ideas that they come up with. It seems that with something about biomass is that you're taking something that is such a major good for the planet and doing something so cruel and unusual to it, and all in the name, and then claiming that this is a sustainable practice and that this is a green practice.
Yeah, you know what it makes me think of is that we're really seeing this rebranding of forests as being waste. Biomass, pellets, forest biomass, it's all just part of some bigger industrial forestry food chain. And claiming that wildfires or insect outbreaks or disease are unnatural is completely unscientific, because every forest ecosystem is the result of natural workings of insects, fire, and disease. They are inevitable. They are necessary. They are natural. Forests in the Pacific Northwest have really evolved with fire and that is how they have become the forest that we know them to be today. Wildfire itself is a really essential process for trees to regenerate. It's a critical natural disturbance. And yet, the forest products industry and wood pellets are using these natural disturbances almost as a Trojan horse to get into the forest and provide the cover that they need to create their product for an energy source that is not needed. We have other choices besides burning wood in power stations.
I think when we were talking on the phone the other day, you made some comment about how we basically have to stop burning things for power.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a couple other people who say the same thing, that we are so used to, and it gets back to my description of being a hippie with a wood stove, there's a comfort of a wood fire. And it goes way back to the cave people. But there's also a realization that at the scale of the number of people that are living on this planet now, that burning things has a much greater impact than it did when there were just maybe a million people living on the planet. And I wonder how we shift our headset so we recognize that burning bad.
Yeah, it's the lowest use of forests is to eventually burn them. It should be the last thing that we do. If we use forest material for products, we should find second, third, fourth uses of them before they end up in our wood stove or at a power station to be burned, right? Instead, what we're finding with the wood pellet production industry that is incentivized because of renewable energy policies, that in fact, trees that wouldn't have been logged before are now being taken from the forest to be incinerated. It is making logging worse and it is increasing logging. So that is those are some of the primary concerns that we have with wood pellets.
I want to talk about this project that you are fighting in around Stockton, California. I actually heard a bunch about it when I was coming back from my last trip to Berkeley last November and heard a program about it on KPFA. And it made me think, actually, as I was hearing this person who was from Stockton who was saying how Stockton is kind of the stepchild of California, and that's where you put everything bad. And I thought, sounds like Longview to me. And then I found out shortly when I got back that Longview is facing the same problem Stockton is. So let's talk a little bit about Stockton and the two counties that are facing this potential biomass development, and then maybe touch a little bit about Longview and what are some of the weaknesses in these communities that are being exploited by the biomass industry.
Yep. So as far as California goes, we mentioned that Drax has signed an MOU with a wood pellet project developer, right? That wood pellet project developer is called Golden State Natural Resources. Golden State Natural Resources proposes to build two industrial scale wood pellet facilities, one in Lassen County. This is the Northern California site that actually would eventually source from Oregon Forest too. And then one and more in the Central Sierras in Tuolumne County. Both of these facilities are going to be industrial scale. The Lassen County facility promises to produce up to 700,000 tons of wood pellets a year. That would make it one of the top 10 wood pellet producers in the whole country of the United States. So it would be a really large plant. And then the one in Tuolumne County proposes to produce about 300,000 tons per year. That makes it for California, 1 million tons of wood pellets being produced every single year from Central Sierra forests. Those wood pellets would not be then used in California. That's not the proposal right now. There are bioenergy facilities in California itself, but instead, Golden State Natural Resources proposes to sell to this global market, specifically citing policies in South Korea and Japan as markets that have renewable energy policies for wood pellets. Therefore, they can get a good price for their product, right? So from Tuolumne and Lassen County, they propose to take forests within a 100-mile sourcing radius of these facilities, truck them to the facilities where they then get processed into wood pellets. Wood pellet processing is terrible for communities. This is where a lot of the air pollution concerns come in. There are noise concerns with wood pellet production facilities because they operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are problems on their roads because of the increase of 18-wheelers. And then there's wood dust. There is a lot of NOx, SOx, particulate matter, HAPS, VOCs, you know, the violations that I was mentioning earlier from Drax in the Southeast is close to their wood pellet production mills. So these wood pellet production mills come with a host of problems that communities complain about. From those wood pellet production mills, once the wood pellet is created, they will then again be transported. This time they're going to be transported via rail. At least that's what GSNR is proposing right now. So they'll rail them, they'll put them on trains from Tuolumne and Lassen counties to the port. The port that they're proposing right now is Stockton, as you mentioned. It's an inland port community. It's an environmental justice community that is supposed to have guaranteed protections in California around air quality, specifically AB 617 and SB 535. And the reason why they have these guarantees, or they're meant to have these guaranteed additional protections for their air quality, is because they have some of the highest pollution burdens in the entire state. They rank in the 99th percentile for pollution burden in the whole state of California. They have really high rates of asthma between the 96th and 99th percentile. They have a high poverty rate. They're also a non-attainment zone for particulate matter and ozone. So they're already burdened as a community. And what they're concerned about in relation to Golden State Natural Resources is that if Golden State Natural Resources decides to use their community as the export terminal, this will only mean additional sources of pollution that they're already fighting, right? So one of the reasons why they have the highest pollution burdens in California is because they're a port community. There's a lot of traffic in and out of that community. This particular project would mean more train and more ship traffic, which are the dirtiest polluters in their community. This is why they are primarily concerned about it, and because Golden State Natural Resources had listed another export terminal originally. It was going to be in Richmond, and the Port of Richmond denied a contract with Golden State Natural Resources. So when Golden State Natural Resources went back to the drawing board, they just ended up with one port as being their possibility to ship all of their material out of California. And it's in Stockton. And Stockton is really turning around and asking everybody, why us? Is it because we're already overburdened? Is it because we're an environmental justice community facing dozens of other polluting projects that we're having to fight? You know that we have limited time, energy, resources to also fight you. They're also concerned with the risk of fires and explosions. As one can imagine, when you store wood pellets all together in one place, it becomes a combustion and fire risk. There have been many fires and explosions related to port facilities that are hosting wood pellets because it's a fire hazard. In my home state of Texas, one fire broke out in the community of Port Arthur, and it burned for nearly 100 days. It sent people to the hospital. The community was located nearby. People had bad air quality for days. And it's very difficult for firefighters to actually come in at that point and put the flames out. So there are enormous concerns around wood pellet export terminals, storage facilities. And the Stockton community is elevating all of these because they're feeling left out of the process. They were never given any education from Golden State Natural Resources while they were going through the scoping process. It is only now, 9 to 10 months after the fact, after Stockton community residents started complaining, that Golden State Natural Resources has even showed their face in the community. And they're trying to uplift their concerns to other regulators as well as policymakers in California because they don't want to be left out of this process.
And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Rita Frost, forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council, about the dangers and damage of producing and burning woody biomass for energy production. I want to take a moment to consider the important role that KBOO plays in our community. We provide thoughtful, challenging, and profound information and music and culture you won't hear anywhere else on the airwaves. Somehow KBOO's kept this up for over 55 years, and you can help us continue to be the cheerful voice of social responsibility by contributing right now during the first week of KBOO's spring membership drive, focusing on the postmodern, the avant-garde, and the alternative. Help us meet our $50,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, and thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Why is it that a community like Stockton or a community like Longview or these very rural communities that you're talking about where the factories would be, how are they marketed to the communities as this is something that's going to be good for them?
I think that the wood pellet production industry has something that environmentalists don't have a lot of, which is jobs, at least when it comes to combating their promises to communities. It's a good question about how much economic development is actually being brought to the communities that have wood pellet production facilities. In a community in North Carolina where this has been studied, the poverty rate actually increased after a wood pellet production facility set up there. So while they may be able to provide a nominal amount of jobs, it's not going to have a significant impact as far as economic development goes, right? I think that that's one of those things that we need to be pretty transparent and clear about, is that it's not a driver of economic development.
What about the fact that it's being promoted as a way to deal with wildfire hazards?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And that's a really serious question for us in the Pacific Northwest. The industry is absolutely positioning itself as one of wildfire mitigation and resilience. those are goals that I think we can all get behind, right? As we in the West continue to struggle with issues around forest management and community risk reduction, we need to be addressing those issues head on. The best available science right now is clearly demonstrating that recent increases in wildfire activity are being driven largely by increased and sustained drought, hot temperatures, high wind events. This is what many scientists are calling the new climate abnormal. It's climate change. And we cannot effectively solve for wildfire increases through unmitigated fire suppression or amped up logging across immense landscapes, because wildfire increases are influenced by ongoing burning of fossil fuels, by ongoing land use practices that are in turn driving destruction of ill-prepared communities. So as this relates to the wood pellet production industry, their logging is contributing to the problem. It's not a solution. Our primary focus should be helping existing communities to become fire safe. And if and where thinning occurs, it should be non-commercial in nature. It should be leaving large fire-resistant and mature trees on the ground and away and protected from logging. You know, getting into this broad-scale thinning thing, right? Fuels reduction feels really powerful and positive to a lot of people who are fearful of wildfires. But when it comes to broad-scale thinning in relation to reducing fire severity, wildfire scientists are telling us that that actually results in more carbon emissions than would have been released by wildfire. So in essence, it's creating a multi-decade carbon deficit that is conflicting with carbon goals. And as we already spelled out, it's really been clearly identified by the scientific community that burning wood pellets themselves as the end goal of those fuel reduction projects would increase carbon in the atmosphere for decades to centuries. Both would contribute to climate change, which in turn will contribute to wildfires and the wildfire issue that we are trying to solve for. In other words, the wood pellet industry, enabling the wood pellet industry, is only going to fuel the wildfire problem. And the wood pellet industry itself is really weaponizing the public's fear of increased fires.
Now, there's also some concern that I've been feeling about looking at the way that things like Washington, Oregon, and California's low carbon fuel standards are actually encouraging focuses on the supposed climate solutions like biomass. I'm wondering, is biomass getting the same kind of subsidies in California that renewable diesel is?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure. I don't work on the low carbon fuel standard as much. I do know the policy landscape in California allows for biomass, right? There are two programs within California. One is called the BioMAT and the other is called the BioRAM, in which they actually do incentivize burning of biomass and bioenergy facilities. There are current existing bioenergy facilities in California. However, they are they're significant in terms of the amount of pollution that they impose on communities, but they are so small compared to what Drax is in the United Kingdom. They're so much smaller than these very large scale utilities in the European Union that are using wood pellets at scale. In fact, I don't think that any of the facilities that are actually using bioenergy in California are burning wood pellets. Communities around bioenergy facilities in California have much of the same issues that communities that face wood pellet production facilities in the Southeast complain about. Air pollution issues. They're some of the dirtiest emitters in the state of California. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there's something in the low carbon fuel standard of California that incentivizes biomass. There are other mechanisms, if not.
The more I learn about the low carbon fuel standard in California, the more I wonder who's behind it, because it seems like a lot of it is really climate unfriendly. And that gets me to, how can people get involved in, first of all, finding out more about the dangers and the downside of biomass? And how do we raise our voices and get some changes made in policies and regulations and other things that the government and the regulators do that could determine the future of whether we actually have real climate solutions or are these false climate solutions?
In my mind, when I think about wood pellet production, I really think of it, and eventual bioenergy use, I think of it as a serious intersectional issue, right? It poses threats to community health and safety. It poses threats for environmental justice concerns. It should be a threat to all of us because of climate and because of biodiversity concerns. So we need to all get involved when it comes to pushing back against wood pellet production and bioenergy writ large. I think that it needs to be a key component of the environmental movement, as well as those who are taking up climate justice and environmental justice frames. We can't leave forests out of the picture, right? One of the things that has been a flag that I've been trying to carry is that we could immediately end fossil fuel use tomorrow, and yet we still wouldn't be able to limit warming to 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees. In fact, we need more carbon removals on the landscape in order to do that. And what is one of the best systems that we have in the United States? Forests. What is under threat right now? Forests. We cannot log our way out of the climate crisis, and we cannot be promoting false solutions like wood pellets that are coming from forests in relation to the climate crisis and in relation to our energy uses. So for California specifically, you know, I think that, and honestly, and in Washington and in Oregon, there's so much education that needs to be done. Wood pellets are not going to be a silver bullet solution either to energy or to wildfires. We really need to be spreading that information as much as possible. We need to be educating our neighbors, and we also need to be educating our policymakers. And we need to make sure that we're not wasting time and resources on wood pellet biomass. You know, when it comes to the wildfire crisis, we need to be equipping communities right now in order to help them home harden and to have community resilience. This means good ingress and egress routes. This means a community emergency plan where they can do so. This means that they're actually actively, proactively helping their neighbors create the home hardening space that they need instead of logging in the backcountry far away from them. That's never going to provide any sort of support when there's a large wind driven fire that is being pushed by climate change. So I'm really focused on that as far as combating the wildfire arguments, right? Where should our time, money, resources be spent right now? And then furthermore, besides just doing that education work and reaching out and building relationships with policymakers, we could get involved and you can get involved in pushing back against these facilities. The Longview facility in Washington is likely going to have a public hearing set for it within this year. They had to go back to the drawing board, actually, because they submitted such an egregiously error-filled permit that the agency told them to go back and do it again. But they will reopen that once they have another draft permit, and we can push back against Drax's plans in Longview, Washington. And then in California, the California Environmental Quality Act will be in place for this both facilities as well as the export terminal. And it'll be important for people to raise their voices there too. Again, that's more of like an administrative approach, and it's getting involved facility by facility. But I think both examples, both Golden State Natural Resources in California, as well as Drax, are indicative of the larger fight and the larger push by the wood pellet production industry to get a grip hold in the Pacific Northwest. If we can push back against these early and these first projects, it can go a long way in showing the industry that they do not belong in Pacific Northwest forests.
I'm thinking back to one of the first things you said about how England cut down all its trees a long time ago. Actually, as far as I understand, I think it was the Romans who cut the trees down in England to build ships to go to war many, many, many centuries ago. And I think that what England did or allowed to do, or what happened to England's forests, is a real lesson for us here in the Northwest. And I wonder, and going out today on Earth Day, how do we see that we can learn the lessons from England's deforestation and not recreate that here in the Northwest?
Gosh, you know, there's something about, you know, valuing what you have while you have it before it's gone. You know, you gotta love what you got. And right now, the United States, we do have some beautifully impressive forests. You know, we have mature and old growth forests still on the landscape. And forests in the United States spread from coast to coast. I remember the beautiful wetland swamps that I used to trounce around in the Gulf, as well as now being able to run through some of the most majestic Douglas fir forests in the Pacific Northwest, some of the most impressive forests I've ever seen. And people who live in the Pacific Northwest, I know, can resonate with that feeling of just being awed by the beauty of forests. Importantly, though, besides just my own touchy-feely feelings about it, scientists are indicating that forests are so radically important in terms of climate change and as being a place and a refuge for the biodiversity that we are so quickly losing. So I would just go out and say, like, you know, love what you got. We cannot lose this. We need to be pushing for their protections. We need a rule at the federal level to protect mature and old growth forests. And we cannot allow for false solutions like wood pellet biomass to be peddled as a solution to climate change when we know that the highest use of forests in relation to climate change is just to let them stand and do what they do best, which is store and sequester carbon on the landscape.
Well, Rita, it's wonderful to spend Earth Day with you. And I want to thank you very much for being on Locus Focus. And I look forward to having you on again one of these days soon.
Thanks so much, Barbara. Yeah, I love this. Thanks so much for having me on.
We've been talking with Rita Frost, forest advocate with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG up here from QDX LP FM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible as we climb out of this pandemic. And you can help us by becoming a member of KBOO, or renewing your membership if you're already a member during the first week of KBOO's spring membership drive, focusing on the postmodern, the avant-garde, and the alternative. We're independent, community-supported, grass-fed, volunteer-powered radio. Help us reach our $50,000 goal. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Kate Murphy with Columbia Riverkeeper and Mary Stites with the Northwest Environmental Defense Center about Zenith Energy's latest outrages. We'll go out with music by Kate and Anna McGarrigle. Thanks for listening and stay safe.
I bid farewell to the state of old New York, my home away from home. In the state of New York, I came of age when first I started roaming, and the trees grow high in New York.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
Postmodernism, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community